Now let me just introduce very shortly Joseph, who will give the next presentation. And from then on, we'll come into the meat of the day. We've just outlined why we are looking at open source. We now get a short introduction to open source so that we all have at least the same understanding of the terminology and the basic concepts underlying it. And I'm very happy that Joseph volunteered to do this. Joseph is a senior lecturer at the University College in Cork, Ireland, and he has published very widely on open source, so he's the ideal person to give this kind of presentation. He's also been involved with the Calibre project during the period he's been running. So Joseph, please.
Okay, thank you first of all for being here today and for allowing me the opportunity to talk about this subject, which is of great interest to me personally and professionally. What I'd like to do today is, as Mark said, to really introduce the topic. And so some of this material might actually be too introductory. You might already be familiar with these terms and concepts, but I'd ask you to bear with me for a few minutes just so we can make sure that everyone does speak the same language in this regard. My agenda for today is to talk through a few different aspects of open source software. One part is to define it, and as Mark suggested a little bit earlier, it can be quite confusing. There's a lot of different terminology being used and a lot of conflicting definitions. To provide some examples of open source software, and I'm afraid they're all of the wrong kind from what Mark just said, that Eurocontrol is not interested in Office productivity tools, they're not interested in server software, and unfortunately all of my examples are mostly in that space. And to talk about some of the implications of the open source concept. I then want to look at the various tasks and risks associated with adopting open source. And again, this might be slightly off topic, because what I just heard from Mark is that Eurocontrol is curious about what it takes to produce open source, not just to adopt it. So I'll try to make some of those lessons a little more relevant to the production. And to ask the question, a very simple question with a difficult answer, is open source ripe for Eurocontrol? And if so, for what parts of Eurocontrol and what goals? And then to open it up to your own questions and comments. So John was saying to you that the Calibre project was named after this term Libre software, which is quite common in Europe. And so we're dealing with three different terms that are fundamentally the same, and the choice of one term over the other is generally ideological rather than practical. So first of all, the concept behind open source software is very simple. It's communities sharing code to make software better. It's as simple as that. And the rest of it is detail. It's licensing detail, development methodology, and the rest. Now, this concept of communities collaborating to build good software is not new at all. It is as old as software, right? It was the dominant paradigm in the early days of computing. It became formalized as a concept in the mid-80s by a man named Richard Stallman, who founded the Free Software Foundation and articulated the free software definition, which was a manifesto, an ideological manifesto, that said that not only can software be made free, but it should be made free. And again, as John said earlier, it's free as in freedom, not free as in no cost, right? So for Richard Stallman, free software was characterized by a set of licensing terms which allowed users to run programs for any reason, to learn from those programs by having access to the underlying source code, to adapt those programs to meet their needs, to redistribute those programs, and he wraps that in language of helping one's neighbor, right? So again, it's an ideological drive, and to improve on the program and subsequently distribute these improvements. Now, because of the word free in English meaning no cost as well as freedom, the business community in the United States was understandably nervous about these software freedoms and about the term free software. So in the late 90s, the term open source was coined as a way of making the free software concept more palatable
to the business community. And that little trick of labeling seems to have been quite successful in that we see ample evidence of widespread industry adoption of open source and open source products and open source processes. Nonetheless, I still think that Richard Stallman's definition of free software is perhaps the most useful to us, because I think what we'll see is these freedoms map actually very nicely onto Eurocontrol's goals of harmonization, improvement of quality, public service, and creation of value. So the next two slides provide a number of examples of open source products. This is a CV, if you like, or it's a resume of open source. It's an impressive two slides in a way. I've been preparing variations on these slides for 6 years. What's unique about the current version of the slides is the diversity of application spaces. Open source has become a very broad field, or now addresses a very broad range of concerns. And also the maturity of the products on these slides is quite impressive, that almost every software product mentioned on these slides is of high levels of maturity and production ready. Right? So that's a far cry from sort of the initial versions of these slides several years back, where you were talking about a handful of infrastructural components and a lot of good ideas and intentions. Right? So I'm not going to go through each and every one of them, but just to sort of look at the types of spaces that we're talking about. Within the enterprise context, the open source community has mature products to offer in terms of operating systems, in terms of groupware for organizations, database servers, web servers, email servers, messaging servers, antivirus tools, various sorts of content filtering tools, content management systems, application servers, versioning tools, etc. Right? So there's an awful lot of activity in the server space. Like I said, all of these products are very mature, and in fact, remarkably, several of them are actually category killers. They simply have no competition, proprietary or open source. So when you think of things like the Apache web server, or things like JBoss as a Java application server, these tools have simply shut down the competition in terms of quality and popularity. Very interestingly, this slide now exists, and it didn't even a few years back. Open source has become something that is able to jump over the hurdle that was first identified for it, which was that open source was seen as coming out of developer needs to meet those needs and to address the needs of the development community. And the thing about the development community is that it's very different than the end user community. Right? And so one of the early criticisms raised against open source and free software was that it was not going to be able to jump this hurdle to the end user space in terms of usability addressing the needs of novice users and the rest. But in fact, we see a huge collection now of end user tools which can essentially replicate everything that organizations currently purchase from proprietary software vendors in terms of a standard office computing environment. So you have window-based desktop environments like GNOME. You've got productivity suites such as OpenOffice that we're using today. Again, the database servers that are used on the server side can also be used in the desktop environment. You have web clients, which again are being touted as category killers. Firefox is seen as a great success and one that fundamentally challenges Internet Explorer, email clients, messaging clients, etc. But really where open source shines in the end user space is in terms of tools for developers, and this makes sense because this is the roots of the phenomenon. And this is perhaps most interesting from the point of view of Eurocontrol, that the actual development environment and the toolbox for building better software is there. And that's more interesting than maybe a better web browser or a better email client. Now, I said that open source was defined by its terms of distribution. Okay, open source software is software that you have access to the source code for, that you can modify, that you can reach, that you can use as you need. The implications of those terms of release are actually quite interesting. Right? They're not black and white. They're not simply, well, this is cheap software, or isn't this nice, I can give a copy to a friend, or I can burn a disk, or whatever. The implications are that the actual development of software shifts from being a enclosed proprietary effort, which is then released to a user group, and this is what Eric Raymond famously called the cathedral style development, to being a open community collaborating on the development of software. And the other fundamental shift is that the software code, which was traditionally seen as the key asset of a software firm, is now made into a commodity. And the software firm must define value using other things. Okay. So to sort of unpack those two shifts, one is the shift from the, if you like, the marketing of software to the community development of software, and the other is this shift from software code as a key asset to software code being essentially just a commodity. The implications of that is that firms can now use open source potentially, right? This isn't always going to work, but potentially to build better software. That's the first possible implication. And this can be done in two ways. One is that you simply learn from the software that is out there, right? And that's why I said Stallman's freedoms to me make the most sense in talking about open source. You can learn from existing code, both at a very low level of the code itself, but also at a very high level in terms of the models, architectures used by applications. And you can leverage the reuse of that code to build applications faster and more cheaply. More importantly, if the code wasn't there at all, the core asset of open source is the community itself. So the implication is that in adopting open source or participating in open source production, firms are able to make use of these communities to design and develop and to debug and to document and to support and to maintain, to evolve their software. Mark made a comment in his presentation that one of the arguments that the skeptics are using in the Eurocontrol context is that this is a very small group, right? So are we going to actually be able to realize the value of this open source community? And I think the answer is likely to be yes. And the reason I'm saying that is that initially, John there was talking about Eric Raymond's laws of release early, release often. One of Eric Raymond's other laws of open source was the idea that given enough eyeballs, all bugs are shallow. And I heard him speak about 2003, where he threw out a corollary to that. And he said, well, actually, that's not quite right. Given the right eyeballs, the most important bugs are shallow. And of course, to get the right eyeballs, you need a lot of them. Right? So I think that what's more important is not the size of the ATM community, but the expertise of the ATM community vis-a-vis software, that you'll have the right eyeballs on the job. And that may be enough in itself to realize some of these advantages. Other implications of these licensing terms. By shifting the software code from being a core protected asset to being essentially a commodity, you empower the software consumer, right? Because the opportunity for vendors to lock you in is removed, or at least mitigated. Now, there's plenty of opportunities for you to willingly walk into lock-ins of other sorts, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But it does significantly balance the power between the software producer and the software consumer. It, in some ways, lowers the cost of acquiring software in terms of licensing fees, right? In other ways, it raises the costs of software acquisition, and we'll talk about that as well. But in an ideal situation, you realize the benefit without the drawbacks, and you do free up resources for other things. And the final implication is that it changes the nature of software business models. To be an open source business, or to even be a hybrid proprietary open source business, requires a fundamental shift from treating software as essentially a manufacturing activity and a marketing activity to treating it as a service and knowledge-based activity, where the value in the software is in its use, not its production. So turning to this idea of how does one adopt open source software, and like I said, I'll try to make it relevant to the flip side of the question, which is how does one go about producing open source software. I'm going to draw heavily on a book that was just published, which I think is actually quite good. It's called Open Source for the Enterprise, published predictably by O'Reilly. Very, very practical book, not academic at all. It's just a couple of IT managers with a couple of decades of experience in dealing with open source, saying this is what works and this is what doesn't. So it's a very useful book. I'd recommend it for the Eurocontrol library. And the core argument of that book is one which resonates with me. And they say that using open source software means taking on the burden of overcoming the lack of productization. And what they mean by that is that the key value offer of the proprietary software industry is the package, right? It is the bundling of legal and support services with software. It is the documentation of software. It is the packaging of software in terms of implementation and the rest. And that, go ahead.
There is nothing inherently proprietary about that. That's something I'll talk about.
Yes.
I think it's important to distinguish the fact what you just described and distinguish it from the type of license people give to that package, to that bundle, to that cost.
Yes, yeah, yes. No, and you're right. And one of the things that we can observe is that in some spaces, open source software is becoming highly productized and is almost indistinguishable from its proprietary counterparts. But open source in the wild, if you like, and particularly as we, in the Eurocontrol context, when we're talking about research level software, experimental software, there is a steep learning curve associated with overcoming this lack of productization. So what I want to talk about is just a few of the things that you need to think about in asking the question of, is a particular piece of open source software right for a particular problem within Eurocontrol? And like I said, this has an adoption focus, but we can also flip it around and say, is the open source process right for Eurocontrol in developing or supporting a particular software effort? Now, the first step, or the first set of questions, really deal with understanding your problem. Right? And there's nothing unique to open source about this. This is just good IT common sense. That if you don't understand your problem, there is no way on earth you're going to find the right solution. Right? You might find the right solution for the wrong problem, but that doesn't do you any good. So there's nothing open source about this, but it's important to state it again. Again, going back to Eric Raymond, and I don't like to do that because there's been a lot of good thinking since Raymond's first work, but one of the things that he talked about was scratching your own itch as a key driver for open source, that developers have a particular need, and that's why they build a particular tool, and then they share it with other developers who have a similar need, and it begins to grow. And I think that it's important that Eurocontrol understand its own itches, right? That the requirements for these systems need to be very clearly defined, and what Jean-Luc said to me last night actually seems to bear well in that regard, because he said Eurocontrol doesn't produce much software, but a lot of requirements. So that's a good thing, because what you're trying to do, of course, is to have clear enough requirements that you can start to leverage the community and the collaboration. Another part of understanding the problem is to understand how important the system is that you're talking about, ranging from a sort of experimental research level systems all the way through to mission critical systems. And that categorization of the system and the importance of the system is going to be an important criteria in deciding whether or not open source products or processes are really appropriate. Another part of this is going to be understanding your tolerance of risk. As a passenger on an airplane, I'm not sure I fully agree with that 0.01% still being acceptable, but it's the tolerance of risk. And very importantly, how are you going to measure success? You know, is it successful if the software is useful? Is it only successful if you've managed to rally an international community around it, or what? So understanding the problem is a key part of this. Understanding yourself as an organization is a key part of this as well, and particularly understanding skill levels. There are a whole host of skills associated with adopting and producing open source software, and only some of them are what you will find in the traditional IT skill bank. Right? So for instance, the familiarity with open source development tools, tools for packaging and building software, that's not actually anything new. All IT software development staffs need to understand their development tools. Hosting skills, system administration skills, systems operation skills. Again, they might be specific to the open source tools, but there's nothing outlandish about that. Programming languages, infrastructure, and rest. What is quite different about open source is the ability to skillfully engage with the community. And again, this goes back to the idea of productization, that if your support and innovation and value is coming from community participation and not necessarily from a business firm, your ability to effectively engage with that community becomes incredibly important. Understanding the product is the last little challenge there. Finding open source software is quite easy, right? There is an enormous number of products out there. Finding good open source software is not too hard, but finding the right software and the right community for your problem may prove to be very difficult. And you need to treat it, of course, with the same level of skepticism that you treat the marketing material of the proprietary software companies. And so you need to go through an evaluation process of these different products. And this is where, in some ways, the hidden cost of open source acquisition lies. No, there's no licensing fee, but it might cost you almost as much to come to the confident answer that that product is right for you. So some of the things that you need to look for in open source software in terms of the maturity of that software include the properties of the product itself. How old is it? Does it have a substantial support for several platforms? How much momentum does the project have? Is it releasing regularly? How popular is it? What is the quality of its architecture and design? You have to evaluate the use of the software. How much is it going to cost to set it up and to customize it for your environment? How much is it going to cost to keep it running? How are you going to support the end user? Is that going to be through an internal skill set or through hiring support from other means? Or is it going to be purely using the community to the best of your ability? The integration of the software, which sounds to me to be dear to the heart of Eurocontrol, as a major theme of interoperability. And then perhaps that last one is the most important. Again, what is the community like? If you're going to build open source software, you are taking on the burden of building a community. If you're going to adopt open source software, you're taking on the responsibility of participating in the community. And so you have to ask questions about that community. Where is its leadership? What are their goals? What is the culture of the community? Is it open? You can be open source and be very, very closed in terms of your cultural attitude to contributors and to end users. Is it vital? Does it change? Does it grow? Or does it show signs of winding down and dying? And how much commitment is there? Both commitment from the community members, but maybe also commitment from other firms. You know, the presence of Sun in an open source project is not necessarily a bad sign for the vitality of that project. Now, there might be other reasons why you wouldn't want Sun or IBM or whomever to be there, but those all factor in. Now, what I would say is that flipping the coin and talking about producing open source rather than consuming it, we can take that skills slide and turn that into your audience, right? To be aware that the actual consumers of the software you're producing are going to be of different levels of skill. And this slide actually becomes the internal slide, right? So if you're looking at someone else's product, then you need to ask the question, how does it fit into these different criteria? If you're talking about building open source and you were asking the question of when is it right to release, this becomes your checklist. You know, it's actually not so important that your software be necessarily mature in the sense of being at an advanced release stage, but the architecture should support that evolution. The culture of your community should support participation if you're expecting it, and the rest. And so I'll just close with this very quickly. Is open source right for Eurocontrol? Maybe. Okay. And I would say that these are the sort of scenarios that would indicate a good match. First of all, if you can match the right product, or in the case of production, the right process to the right problem, that's a hygiene factor. That's a necessary step. If you try to match it to the wrong problem, it's never going to succeed. Now, what it would say is that things like office productivity tools, which I know you're not interested in, might actually be a great way to cut your teeth, because you can learn from the experiences of an IT staff trying to engage with, say, the Open Office community or the Mozilla community, and leverage those lessons for the actual core operational software. The next scenario is that if the cost of ownership is tightly related to licensing and vendor lock-in, then the opportunities for savings are there. If the cost of your software ownership and use is not related to licensing, but is related to maintenance and use, you're not going to save any money. It's as simple as that, because open source is no cheaper to use, it's cheaper to acquire. Conversely, if you can improve the value of your software ownership by enjoying these freedoms of modification and redistribution and the rest, then the potential for gain is quite strong, right? If, on the other hand, you can see no discernible value from redistributing software or modifying it, then you're never going to take advantage of it, right? And then I think that those last two are actually maybe the most pertinent to Eurocontrol. If you can build value by creating community and participating in community, then open source has an awful lot to offer, even if the software itself was completely identical to its proprietary counterpart, because the value is what you're deriving is from the community, not from the software, right? And then the last thing, I think, which ties in nicely with this idea of public service, is if you have an institutional need to share your software, to share your intellectual property with the stakeholders who paid for it, right, then this might be a very appropriate course of action. So I'll leave it at that. I think I probably went over time and into our coffee. Sorry.
You didn't.
And if you have any questions, I'm happy to take a stab at them. Yeah.
Just a small comment. You mentioned risks. In my opinion, open source software is great for controlling of risks because it gives the user much more freedom but also responsibility. We were involved in several big projects where commercial middleware was used, and we had big problems with the commercial middleware. It was lousy software, full of bugs. Mm-hmm. The support was completely unresponsive. Whenever we had a problem, the answer was get more licenses, give us more money, and this almost killed the project. And then we switched to open source software where we could fix all our problems by ourselves. So open source software in this case was a great way to reduce risks. Mm-hmm. But on the other side, this could also lead to a quite ineffective use of open source software, because you think, now I can do everything by myself, and I do everything by myself. Mm-hmm. And now, at the end, we even became a maintainer of this open source middleware we used. Now we have the situation that we see that large companies are using our software, and they want, for example, port it to another platform. And what they do is, they do it by themselves. They spend a lot of effort because they are not very experienced with it. And of course, they have to pay for the programmers doing this, instead of coming to the maintainer, who have much more experience with it, and who could do this much easier and more cost-effective on the support contract. Mm-hmm. So open source gives you a lot of freedom, but also a lot of responsibility.
It does.
And if you use it wisely, it's great. But you also can cut yourself very easily.
No, well, thank you for making that comment, because I think that's true. I mean, the other thing I would point out in narrative you gave is that the quality and the management of risk was improved for your organization because you had the skill to take on those responsibilities. And that's really, those are the three pieces of the puzzle, that it's the software itself and its current level of quality, if you like, the licensing terms, which gives you the freedom to improve it and engage in it. But there is really that third criteria of, do you know how?
Yeah,
and if you don't know how, can you get involved with the community? Because even if you can't fix software, you may be fully able to clearly articulate what it is you need fixed, mm-hmm. and chances are you're not the only one.
Yes.
So it's a juggling act.
Yes, and in the case of commercial software, the only person or the only organization we can talk to is the vendor.
Yeah.
And maybe the vendor just says, now we cancel the product line because the market is too small, which happened to a company working in the same level, the same systems. They said, yeah, we still use commercial software, and we said, no, we go completely to open source software. Mm-hmm. And 3 years later, the product line on which this product was based on was completely canceled. The license was changed, and this other company then got into trouble. If you do not have the own expertise in-house, in the case of open source software, if one provider of support does not work for you, you still can find another one.
Yes.
So, much better.
Yeah, to tie up the two things we were talking about earlier, about Eurocontrol releasing software, mm-hmm. and your point about building community, perhaps what Eurocontrol needs to do is to start having an explicit release open source and then continue the project as a community project, trying to build a community around the software, rather than simply sort of saying, okay, the project's over, so now we stop doing that, and now we're going to do something else and forget about it.
That's an excellent idea. Can you say, make your representatives in our teams repeat this to our bosses?
I will have words when I get home.
I think we should also have words over coffee now. Thank you, Joseph, for this introduction.